Around Australia. Here's Inside Motorsport.
Good evening, I'm Craig Revell.
And I'm Colin Ford. Welcome to this week's edition of Inside Motorsport.
Coming up on this week's show, we speak with Jeff Harris.
With an Australian team. Actually, it's the only car of the cars that have arrived, the only one to have had a cover taken off. It is one of the Minardis. And sitting on the airbox there is an Australian flag.
And we also preview the Indy Racing Northern Lights series with Mike King.
March the 18th with the Copper World Indy 200 at Phoenix International Raceway. It will be a 200-lap, 200-mile event. And going into that event, of course, as you well know, Roger Penske will have his drivers, Gilles Deferrin and Helio Castroneves there. And I think the fact that Roger Penske has opted to be a part of that event says something to the rest of the open-wheel racing community.
Stand by for news. Peter Norton was at the V8 Lights at Wakefield Park today and he has this report.
The V8 Lights racing came to Wakefield Park this weekend where Simon Wills used his superior experience from being an Australian driving champion to just narrowly pip Leanne Ferrier in the final race, taking advantage of a pace car. Third was Paul Dumbrell from Michael Simpson. We spoke to Simon Wills after the race.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Well, for all that happened in the reverse grid race with me having to leave the circuit a couple of times, I really didn't think I'd be up here. I was just hoping to try and make the top three, but to win the day is just, I'm ecstatic. I just cannot believe it. So, yeah, just go on and celebrate from here.
Before the safety car came out in the final race, did you think you were a chance of grabbing the lead?
I sort of just decided that I'd settle into a rhythm. I was chipping away at Leanne, but I knew that I was starting to run out of laps. But I thought I might be able to catch her, but I'd struggle to pass her because I was burning my tyres up trying to get that extra little bit. But thankfully the safety car came out for me. It worked against me in race two, but it worked for me this race. So, roll on Oran Park.
And the real star to come out of this weekend's racing is Leanne Ferrier, 20-year-old from the Gary Rogers Motorsport stable. She's developed a particularly strong following of female fans, and young ladies in particular were lined up quite deep at the souvenir stand. She's one of the superstars of the future.
Well, I think everything pretty much went to plan. I think we qualified in the top 10, and I probably would have liked to have been a bit further up, but that was still all right, and moved forward in the first race and moved forward in the second race. And in the third race, it looked like I was going to win there for a while, but unfortunately the safety car came out and had to actually fight for it with Simon Wills, and he ended up winning. So that was a bit of a shame, but, it was a good race, and, I was really happy with it.
Yeah, you can't trust the gods of safety cars, can you?
No. I mean, everything was looking fine. The next thing I know, there's a car in the sand trap, and I thought, oh, great. It's going to be a safety car, and there goes my lead.
Were you aware of the crowd support, particularly after your fantastic run in the second race, that the crowd at the souvenir stand was quite amazing?
Yeah, I did notice, actually. I had a lot of people outside our garage after the second race, or wanting autographs, or just to tell me, how well I did. And I think that's really excellent, because I haven't had that kind of support from the fans before, so it is a good feeling.
The cars have started to arrive in Melbourne as they get set for the Australian Formula One Grand Prix next weekend. Jeff Harris says that every car is now in Melbourne, but for the Ferraris.
We've seen all those we expected to date, except, of course, the Ferraris. The first jumbo came in at about 8 o'clock this morning, and just as the doors were about to be opened up, we were advised that the Ferraris weren't in. Some talk that they've actually kept the cars back in Italy for another day or two for some extra testing. And what it looks as though it means now is that they aren't part of the scheduled Formula One cargo, that the cars will actually have to come on a commercial flight. But that kind of thing's happened before, although I'm not sure that it's happened with all their cars before, maybe just one or two late cars.
And, of course, the NASCAR series moved to Rockingham this weekend, where Jeff Bodine passed Jeff Green, Todd Bodine passed Jeff Green in the final laps to take out victory at the Alltel 200. Todd Bodine used new tyres to overcome the defending NASCAR Busch Series champion, Jeff Green, to win on Saturday at the North Carolina Speedway. Green held the lead on the restart with less than 10 laps remaining, then opted to remain on the track without pitting when Scott Wimmer brought out a final race caution with 15 laps to go. On the strength of the four new tyres, though, Bodine roared from sixth position on the restart to pass Green just one lap later. The five laps to go, there was a seventh and final caution when Ryan Newman, Elton Sawyer and Tim Feeder were tangled in turn one. The red flag came out on lap 193 and they then saw the final race to the flag being decided for Todd Bodine driving in the Petty Dodge driver Buckshot Jones' ride from last year.
Yes, continuing on in NASCAR and following the tragic accident last weekend which resulted in the death of NASCAR legend Dale Earnhardt, Sterling Marlin, one of the drivers who was involved in that crash, has received threats via fax and from a number of so-called Earnhardt fans, is unsure whether he's going to attend last Thursday's memorial service for Earnhardt. Marlin, who made contact with Earnhardt as they approached the final corner of the Daytona 500 as the seven-time champion attempted to block him, has confirmed he received threatening faxes at home. A policeman was put on duty outside the Marlins Chip Ganassi Racing race shop in Mooresville, North Carolina on last Tuesday after calls threatening Marlin and his family were taken. A number of similar emails were sent to his website. Chip Ganassi Racing team spokeswoman Gigi Liberati said the threats to Marlin were being taken seriously and the precautions to ensure Marlin's safety were being taken. The Daytona 500 winner Michael Waltrip said on Monday that Marlin was in no way to blame for Earnhardt's death. And at the same time, NASCAR had already gone on record as absolving him of any responsibility in the incident which led to Earnhardt's death. Dale Earnhardt Jr., we had some details from him at Rockingham.
I do want to say that any notion or any idea that or any blame placed upon anyone, whether it be Sterling Marlin or anybody else for that matter, is ridiculous and will not be tolerated. I just think it's completely incredible that some of the things that I've heard or been told about. But one of the things that this really teaches you the most about is how selfish you are about things like this. I mean, I miss my father, and I've cried for him, but out of my own selfish pity is the reason for those emotions, and I just try to maintain a good focus for the future and just remember that he's in a better place that we all want to be, and that's really all I have to say.
It has been revealed overnight by NASCAR officials that Dale Earnhardt's lap belt was found broken after the crash that killed him near the finish line of the 500. A medical doctor stated that Earnhardt, 49, might have survived Sunday's crash if the cloth belt had held. NASCAR president Mike Hilton had this to say.
We're going to put the number three in a moratorium for 1 year and not run the number three on anything. We will never run a number three black Goodwrench car again. We may run a number three car again someday. We've got 28 years at RCR invested in it. Junior Johnson made the number three famous back in his era. Ray Fox made the number three famous. This is a totally different situation. Right now, all I can say about the three is NASCAR says that they do not retire numbers, that they would like to see us keep the number, and we plan on keeping the number three. They're going to work with us to put it in a moratorium. You're supposed to run a number five times, but they're going to waiver that, and we'll go forwards, and let's see how this heals and see what happens from this point.
Of course, that was Richard Childress from Richard Childress Racing, the team owner of Dale Earnhardt's car. Just going back, Mike Hilton said, a broken left lap seatbelt came apart. We don't know how, when, or where yet. we will continue the investigations. Now, it was interesting that on first reports, Dr. Steve Bohannon, head of the Emergency Medical Services at Daytona International Speedway, who tried to see Earnhardt at the scene, stated that Mr. Earnhardt more than likely contacted the steering wheel with his face. Now, Bohannon speculated that with this broken seatbelt, Earnhardt's body could have been thrown forward and to the right, thrusting him into the steering wheel. Earnhardt's chin might have hit the steering wheel, causing major head injuries that killed him on impact. A skull fracture ran from the front and back of his brain. And we will have a tribute to the Intimidator, Dale Earnhardt, later on in the show.
Meanwhile, in World Rally news, Alistair McRae has survived a high-speed crash that ran off his Honda Accent World Rally car. The accident happened while the Scottish driver was testing the team's new second-generation Accent in Girona, northern Spain. McRae and his co-driver Ian Grinrod escaped unhurt when the car flipped and rolled in the pair's second run of the day's testing. "It all happened very fast," said McRae. "I just ran a little wide at a sixth-gear corner and the car touched a bank by the side of the road. This flipped it into the road and it started to roll. We were going very fast and it seemed to roll for a very long time. This test had gone very well up to that point, but sometime something like this is always a risk when you're trying to realise all the car's new potential. The car is a write-off, but did prove the strength of the roll cage and other safety features built into it. The new Evolution Accent World Rally car will make its rally debut in the Rally of Portugal on the 8th to 11th of March. Also in World Rally news, news that Rally Oz is going to be staying in Western Australia. Rally Australia will stay based in Perth for the foreseeable future after the West Australian government and TV rights holder ISC negotiated a new three-year deal. The state government has also inked a long-term deal with Cairns, the Australian governing body, to further strengthen the rally's ties with Perth. The combination of these two agreements will put an end to speculation about the event's future in Western Australia, said the state's development minister, Clive Brown. Meanwhile, in Melbourne, they're already talking about putting forward a proposal to get the Rally Australia to move to Melbourne in 2004, when the current West Australian TV agreement runs out.
Talking TV deals, it's been revealed to Inside Motorsport that Channel 10 will be picking up the Formula One Grand Prix from next season in a deal with Channel 9 that will see Channel 9 obtaining from the 10 network the Melbourne Cup and Channel 10 gaining the Formula One season from the two newly formed AFL partners. Other rumours at hand is that Seven have won the rights to the V8 supercars in season 2002. Part of the deal will see a reported Saturday qualifying show being broadcast on the Seven network.
And Formula 3000, the lead-up Category 4 Formula 1, they've been out testing at the Imola circuit in Italy on last Wednesday and Thursday. And at this stage, the times that have been set see some interesting situations where they have young Jamie Mello from the Durango Formula team heading the times that have been set from Patrick Freuscher in the Red Bull Junior team, Fernando Alonso in the European Minardi Junior team in third, Mario Haberfeld Supernova, which is Mike Webber's teammate, in fourth, Thomas Enge from Nordic fifth, Fernando Alonso in European Minardi in sixth, Justin Wilson Nordic seventh, Antonio Pizzonia from Petrobras 8th, and our own Mark Webber was sitting down in 9th. Interesting enough, the other Australian in the Formula 3000 Championship, Christian Murchison, he was bogstock last, 25th in the practice testing sessions in his Fortec. Things probably need to come a bit better for young Christian.
News out of Adelaide this week that the American Le Mans Series race support from the South Australian government has been withdrawn. Inside Motorsports reporter Dave Langfield from South Australia gives us more details.
2:10, our time here on Friday afternoon, I got a phone call from one of my officials, mates, to say that the state government knocked it on the head. And from all accounts, the main players involved found out probably about half an hour before we did. And the story that we've had was that panels was apparently not told until the last minute. Dean Rainsford, the guy in charge of Panels Motorsport Australia here in Adelaide, was on a holiday, was contacted by his own staff saying what's going on, and they found out because the media rang them for comment. Glenn Cooper, the boss of Cooper's Brewery here, which had signed a rather large sponsorship deal to sponsor race for 3 years, story goes that he was found out at the luncheon where the Premier, Mr. Olsen, announced it to the rest of the people, and he was sort of left with his jaw on the table.
Yeah, great way to find out about the fact that the race you're sponsoring is being cancelled. In Formula One news, getting ready for the Formula One Grand Prix down in Melbourne, the start of the season. And in testing last Monday at the Mugello circuit in Italy, Ferrari driver Rubens Barrichello set another lap record. Brazilian Barrichello set the previous record held by Sauber driver Nick Heidfeld of Germany, which had been set on the Sunday, by more than 1 second. "This is my last day of testing before the Australian Grand Prix," said Barrichello, who set the record with a 1:22.139 lap. "My lap time? I'm not surprised, but I'm certainly happy with the work we've done so far." Barrichello's teammate, world champion Michael Schumacher, was less than 0.8 of a second behind. Schumacher said, today's times confirmed that the car is very quick. "Right from the start, I had a positive feeling about the car, and that continues to be the case with every day that passes." Both drivers worked on setup and aerodynamics. Schumacher continued testing on the Tuesday, and apparently that's where he ran into some engine problems, and this could be the reason why the cars are being late in arriving into Melbourne.
One of the interests in this year's Australian Grand Prix is the five rookies that will be taking the grid. It comprises of almost a quarter of the field that kicks off next weekend at Albert Park. And whilst the names on the boards for the new drivers erected above the garage in this event are already new names to most of the media, the rookies in the 22-car field have plenty of experience. Juan Pablo Montoya of Colombia was the winner of last year's Indianapolis 500 and was the car champion in 1999. BMW-powered Williams F1 will see him teammate Ralf Schumacher. The last reigning Indy 500 winner to start at Melbourne was Jacques Villeneuve, who qualified on the pole in 1996. By the way, he took out a world championship in that year as well. He led most of the race until an oil leak slowed him. His Williams teammate, Damon Hill, had taken that victory. Kimi Räikkönen of Finland has only driven 23 race cars and 23 car races, and only in Formula Renault, none in Formula 3000 or Formula 3, the traditional training grounds of Formula 1. Räikkönen's super license to race at Melbourne has been subject to great controversy throughout Europe. Fernando Alonso of Spain will be in 19 years old and 7 months at the time of the start. Little more than a month older than the youngest driver in Formula 1 history, New Zealander Mike Thackwell, who was 19 years 5 months and 29 days when he started the 1980 Canadian F1 Grand Prix, the race at which Australia's Alan Jones clinched his world title. Alonso will drive for the Australian-Italian team, Minardi. Enrique Bettinelli, the Brazilian driver who has graduated through the traditional Formula 3000 ranks, like Alonso, Bettinelli will drive for the Arrows team. Luciano Berti, another Brazilian who becomes Eddie Irvine's teammate at Jaguar, replaces Johnny Herbert.
Yes, and the European Minardi Formula 1 team has completed this year's driver line up for the Grand Prix by signing Brazilian Tasso Marquez to fill the team's second seat alongside Fernando Alonso. After much speculation over the last 2 weeks, Marquez has come out on top from a list of contenders that included ex-Sauber, Arrows and Ferrari Formula 1 driver Gianni Morbidelli and Dutch driver Christian Albers. For Marquez, he will be returned to the Fanza-based team. Brazilian competed in 11 Grand Prix with Minardi during 1996-97, achieving the best result of a 10th place at the British Grand Prix. Marquez has spent the last 2 years driving in the US Champ Car Series. The 25-year-old stood in for an injured Al Unser Jr. at Penske in 1999 and drove the sole Swift chassis with Dale Coyne Racing last year, scoring just 11 points.
40 years ago, one of Australia's greatest motor racers, Lex Davison, won his fourth Australian Grand Prix at Malalar in South Australia, long before this Grand Prix was a world championship round. Now a grandson of Davison is starting on a course he hopes will lead him all the way to Formula One. Will Davison, 18, who has just completed higher school certificate at Melbourne Xavier College, will race in the latest model open-wheeler Formula Ford car from the renowned Van Diemen factory in England. And around Australia this year, he is looking to leapfrog other competitors in Australia to make his way to Europe and to Formula One glory.
Well, over a third of the 2001 Grand Prix grid faces a race against time to pass Formula One's stringent crash tests after failing them first time round. Max Mosley, president of the Sports FIA governing body, has refused to name the four teams involved, but UK press reports during the week have hinted that the UK-based Benetton and British American Racing are two of the teams involved. All new Formula One cars have to pass a series of FIA-approved impact tests before they are allowed to take part in the first Grand Prix of the season. But with most teams flying their cars out to Melbourne at the end of this week, as we're going to hear later, they've arrived today, the window for modifications and retests is very small. For 2001, the side impact and rollover tests have been made even more stringent, but Mosley says that some teams have initially compromised strength for lightweight. It is, however, regarded as normal practice within the sport for teams to use the crash test to fine-tune impact structures to comply with the minimum weight possible. Mosley warned that without passing the test, teams will not be allowed to practice and race in Melbourne. UK press reports claim that Benetton failed the side impact test while BR failed to pass the front impact test on its nose cone after failing its initial impact tests. Ferrari is also expected to get a green light. They had been resubmitting a new chassis last Thursday.
The Northern Territory government announced that it would back this year's upgraded Australian Safari International Cross Country Rally, which includes a round of the World Cup for motorcycles. Chief Minister, the Honourable Dennis Burke, has said the government was delighted to extend its support for a third successive year. And he predicted the 2001 safari over a course from Alice Springs to Darwin from August 19 to 26 would benefit greatly from the prestige of being part of the World Cup. This year's safari will be the fourth round of the Fédération Internationale Motocycles Cross Country Rallies World Cup, and in the past the event will also include separate divisions for four-wheel drive vehicles.
And returning just quickly to the Formula One, news that for Formula One they'll be replacing the traditional yellow warning flags with a system of electronically controlled variable speed limits in 2002. The new system will be introduced as part of the deal which has allowed traction control and electronic gearboxes to be used from this season's Spanish Grand Prix on April 29. The sports governing body, the FIA, has required teams to submit a package of extra high-tech safety measures in order for the outlawed driver aids to be reintroduced. Cars will be fitted with a system which warns a driver a speed limit is in operation and also informs him if he has exceeded that limit and is to receive a stop-go penalty, almost like having a speed camera set up in the car. From 2002, the yellow flag system will be replaced by the imposition of variable speed limits, said FIA President Max Mosley. These will depend on the layout of circuits at the accident site and the degree of risk to track workers. Will be decided by the race director and communicated electronically to every driver in the area of the accident. Initially, the system will not be capable of automatically reducing the speed of the car. That will still be down to the driver. However, 2003, the FIA safety car will be replaced by a system which will maintain a constant speed and distance between cars. I reckon it's going to make it interesting where once upon a time the old safety car pulls off, watch from the go, now they'll have a flicker switch and... Geez, it's almost like Scalatrix racing, isn't it?
I was about to say, it's AFX all over again. But finally, we go to Britain for news on the BTCC.
Yes, and former Formula One star Derek Warwick has given the new British Touring Car Championship regulations his seal of approval after overseeing his Works Vauxhall 888 team test in Italy last week. The Banbury-based squad took two of its new touring-class Astra Coupes to Vallelunga for the Michelin tyre test last week, with both Ivan Muller and Jason Plato getting stints behind the wheel. Warwick came away content with the new rules aimed at lowering budgets and have not cost too much with speed. While we were there, the Super Touring Alpha, driven by Nicola Larini, was going around in mid-14s. The Super Reduction BMW, piloted by Peter Cox, was doing high 21s and low 22s, and we were lapping in the 17 and 18s, he said. It's exactly what was forecast, exactly where we wanted to be. Warwick, who gave up his place in Vauxhall's driving squad for a pit wall role 3 years ago, and his drivers were happy with the performance levels that the new rules have dictated. 888 plans to build 6 Astras for this year's British Touring Car Championship. Moore and Plato will be factory back entries, and 2 more will be run by a 888 satellite team. A further pair of cars are planned to be farmed out to a privately run team. Works rivals Peugeot has yet to test its new 406, but has signed Independence Cup King Matt Neal, Steve Soper and Dan Ease for the season. Peugeot, apparently the problems in them getting out testing is that a number of components they've been waiting for from subcontractors haven't arrived on time, and team manager there is apparently fuming at the ears and losing available track time.
Still to come on Inside Motorsport this afternoon, we take you up the road to Wakefield Park for all the news from the V8 lights. We see more from the Australian Grand Prix, find out why the Le Mans race is not going back to Adelaide, and speak to Mike King on the Indy Racing Northern Lights series.
Inside Motorsport will return after these messages.
Well, that was a brilliant run by first, second and third place getters, but the best form we've seen here today has been from Actab, who now are paying more for place bets than ever before. Remember, Actab place bets now pay you more. Sponsors of Triple S.
Attention all runners, joggers and walkers, it's time to pick up your entries to take part in the 2001 New Balance Canberra Marathon weekend on the 7th and 8th of April. Entry forms available from the runner shop in Phillip must be in by March 16. The Canberra Marathon, fun for all.
Let's shake our hips with Wag the Dog. Turn your head and groove along. Shake your hands and move your knees. We're dancing with Wag the Dog.
Buy a guide dog puppy keyring and help a puppy become a guide dog. These are great.
Groovy. I love them.
Be like the Wiggles and help a puppy become a guide dog. Buy a guide dog puppy keyring at Woolworths supermarkets now. Just $2.50.
Hi.
Good morning.
I need a clock that has more time.
More time?
My dad says he wishes he had more time with me.
Oh, well, maybe if he brought his watch in, I could squeeze just a few extra moments between, say, 3 and 5.
And I could put the 3 where the 11 is so I could get out.
The Churchill Trust is now calling for Australians from all walks of life to apply for the 2002 Churchill Fellowships. You could be going overseas in 2002 for about 4 to 10 weeks on a Churchill Fellowship that would cover fares, a living allowance and fees. No special qualifications are needed as merit of the project and the benefit to Australia are significant factors. Look up the Churchill Trust on www.churchilltrust.org.au or call the Trust on 1800 777 231. Applications close 28th of February 2001.
Inside Motorsport, from the racetrack to your radio.
Well, returning to World Rallying, here's a deal that they're going to be getting over in the UK regarding television, which I think we could dream of here in Australia. But the British commercial TV Channel 4 has signed an exclusive three-year TV deal with International Sports World Communicators to show the World Rally Championship in Britain from 2002. The station will broadcast all 14 rounds of the series and is promising programs on the Friday, Saturday and Sunday of each event. Live action from the final stage on the Sunday afternoon is also part of a new package organised by Dave Richards. In total, each rally will receive up to 3.5 hours coverage. C4's deal is a major coup for station, which has fought a six-month battle with BBC Sport for rights. No figures have yet been released, but conservative estimates suggest that C4 is investing in excess of £15 million over the next three seasons. I'd like to see that sort of television coverage for rallying here in Australia, but I don't think we will somehow.
The V8 lights are at Wakefield Park today, where Peter Norton caught up with all the action.
Yes, Craig, V8 lights put on a pretty good show here at Wakefield Park, where 8,000 people came into the track to watch the young and up-and-coming stars of V8s to do their stuff. It was a three-race effect, with the second race being reverse grid, and in the first race it was Simon Wills who started off pole and took out the race one victory. He didn't have it all his own way. Canberra's Dale Breed actually led there for about a lap or so, but then he progressively worked his way back through the field, unfortunately. Second place was a relatively unknown to the top line racing, and it's Michael Simpson from Queensland, previously a Queensland Formula Ford champion, and he put in a pretty good effort there to take out second in that first race. Owen Kelly from the John Faulkner Racing Commodore was third, and as I said, Dale Breed worked his way back from leading at one stage to finish fourth in that race. David Truckee Parsons has put in a pretty good weekend, finished fifth, then followed by Gary Holtz. Craig Harris, who pretty much had a disappointing weekend, he put in excellent form last year's series, and he really hasn't been able to convert that to anything much this year so far. The real talking point of the weekend was Leanne Ferrier in the Gary Rogers Motorsport Valvoline Commodore. She started 10th on the grid and finished a good 8th position in that first race. Paul Dumbrell in the Wins Commodore rounded out the top 10, and he ended up with a fantastic starting position for that second race. Second race, a reverse grid for the top 10 cars, had Dumbrell starting off and he basically led flag to flag. Leanne Ferrier, starting from third, she managed to defend pretty well from a lot of pressure from behind from Craig Harris and Rick Shaw and a few others. And then later in the race, she actually got the upper hand and passed Mel Rose for second place. And that's really when the support for Leanne really came alive. a lot of the fans, in particular the ladies and the young girls, really sort of warming to having a bit of a V8 superstar that they could really relate to. Simon Wills had a pretty unhappy time. He started front 10th, having won the first race, but then he got sort of caught up in various people spinning in front of him, but he did manage to improve from 10th and finish 7th in that second race. Mike Simpson had a bit of a shocker in the second, parking it in the sand trap, which had a safety car, and he lost a lap or so in that and finished 16th. So that really put paid to him having an excellent result for this weekend. Third race, all the eyes were on Leanne Ferrer, whether she could grab her first race victory in her first round. And sure enough, she was first off the line, and she led for many, many laps. Early in the race, there was a bit of a tangle with David Parsons, a few other people, people spinning off into the grass, and that left Leanne with about a 3 or 4 second lead. She was doing it easy. A little bit later in the race, there was a spin just leading into the main straight, which really mixed up the field. Those people who suffered from a pretty poor result in the second race all of a sudden were up there in the top 10 and in the top 5. So really it was coming down to Leanne Ferrer from Simon Wills. And unfortunately, late in the race, Simon parked at a sand trap, brought out a safety car, and that really bunched up the field. Leanne Ferrer's lead was all evaporated in an instant. Sure enough, off the restart, she was defending pretty well, but unfortunately the superior experience, at least from Simon Wills, a reigning Australian driver's champion from Formula Holden, his experience really paid off, and he was able to put a nice pass on Leanne to take the lead and then the race. So the final race, it was Simon Wills from Leanne Ferrier from Michael Simpson. Dale Breed finished a pretty disappointing 15th for the Canberra race fans. Another guy who had a pretty awful weekend was Jeff Full. He was driving the car that won the championship last year, and he basically kept it on the blacktop. He was spinning and ending up in sand pits, and he really was the disappointment of the meeting, because we knew he had pretty good equipment. So end of the day, the surprise, surprise, Simon Wills wins the point score across the three races from Leanne Ferrier. Paul Dumbrell did pretty well, particularly from winning that second race. He took out third position in the points. Michael Simpson managed to get enough points to finish fourth overall from David Parsons, Mal Rose and Dale Breed. All up, it was a pretty good day's racing, and of course Wakefield Park, where you can see all the action around the whole track, it really makes it quite entertaining. You can really follow each of these dices as they develop.
Inside Motorsport, from the racetrack to your radio.
Well, that was a brilliant run by first, second and third place getters, but the best form we've seen here today has been from Actab, who now are paying more for place bets than ever before. Remember, Actab place bets now pay you more. Sponsors of Triple S.
Let's shake our hips with Wag the Dog. Turn your head and groove along. Shake your hands and move your knees. We're dancing with Wag the Dog.
Buy a guide dog puppy keyring and help a puppy become a guide dog. These are great.
Groovy. I love them.
Be like the Wiggles and help a puppy become a guide dog. Buy a guide dog puppy keyring at Woolworths supermarkets now. Just $2.50.
Inside Motorsport, from the racetrack to your radio.
Yes, and today saw lots of action down in Melbourne with the arrival of the Formula One cars. And we spoke with Jeff Harris from the Australian Grand Prix Corporation. Of course, our first question was, why weren't the Ferraris there?
Yes, it seems that there's some talk that they've actually kept the cars back in Italy for another day or two for some extra testing. And what it looks as though it means now is that if they aren't part of the scheduled Formula One cargo, that the cars will actually have to come on a commercial flight. But that kind of thing's happened before, although I'm not sure that's happened with all their cars before, maybe just one or two late cars.
Mm. Now, of course, the arrival of the cars, that really is the mark that says, hey, we're into the final countdown before the start of the Formula One season in Melbourne next weekend.
Yes, it's a bit like, I suppose, the grand final parade or something for football, that it really is the signal that, yep, here we are, we're ready to go.
Now, obviously, this year round, there's a bit of difference in the fact that there's a bit of focus on a team that's normally at the back end of the field, but now with the Australian connection, the European Minardi team, no doubt, their cars amongst those that arrived there in Melbourne today.
Yes, in fact, the Minardi cars were the first ones to touch Australian soil. There were only five cars in the first plane, the two Minardis and three Saubers, which, of course, have a Ferrari engine now, the Saubers. But the Minardis came out first, and there was a lot of interest there with the television crews from the Melbourne television stations and the photographers and whatnot from the newspapers. It's quite amazing that normally a Minardi wouldn't really, no one had bat an eyelid about a Minardi, but it's all different now with Paul Stoddart, the Australian guy, having bought the team. And I think the number of media clippings for Minardi in the past few weeks probably rival Ferrari.
That's right, and particularly given the fact that for Australians it's now something that will actually add a lot more interest into the Australian Grand Prix. It's almost as good as having an Australian driver.
Yes, I suppose it came out of the blue. Paul Stoddart has been looking at Formula One teams for some time, and he was interested, I know, a couple of years ago in taking a stake in the Jordan team. He looked at the Tyrrell team before it became BAR, and also he had a very close association with Arrows. But I suppose we were sitting waiting for the next Australian Formula One driver, and of course with Mark Webber right on the verge there, and perhaps James Courtney as well. The focus was on that, and yet all of a sudden we end up with an Australian team. And actually, it's the only car of the cars that have arrived, the only one to have had a cover taken off. It is one of the Minardis, and sitting on the airbox there is an Australian flag.
Well, that's nice to see. Now, you mentioned, of course, Mark Webber and James Courtney. Mark, of course, will be in Melbourne for the Grand Prix, performing part of his ambassador's duties.
Yes, I think he's got quite a busy schedule. There's lots of people who want a piece of him now, and he's got several companies that have supported him, in particular Yellow Pages for a long time, but more recently a couple of other companies like Computershare have come in behind him. I know he's got some engagements with these kind of companies, as well as certain public engagements and whatnot, and as well, I suppose, he's got to be on duty just in case he's needed, because he is the Benetton test driver, and if anything were to happen to either Giancarlo Fisichella or Jenson Button, he could be called on in a hurry to be to hop into one of the Benetton cars.
Yeah, just waiting to get the word that a rampant Melbourne tram has run over one of those two drivers and Mark's called to the seat.
Yeah, I don't think we could wish that upon on either of those guys, Fisichella or Button, but of course, we saw it last year that Eddie Irvine had a stomach complaint for one of the races, and Luciano Berti was dropped in as the test driver, and he was just the right man on the spot at the time. So those kind of things can happen.
Mm. Now, of course, this week in the lead up to the race, now there's a number of different promotional events. Drivers will be out to around Melbourne, various media events, and of course this year again, I think you've got the Arrows launching because they actually haven't done their team launch for 2001 yet in Europe.
No, there's actually three teams that haven't launched. Arrows have had some kind of a launch, but they're certainly having another one here this year at the track on Thursday morning. The Prost team are having one on Wednesday afternoon, and Minardi are actually having their launch in central Melbourne on the steps of Parliament House.
So it's definitely the focus this week will be on Melbourne in the lead-up to the Australian Grand Prix, with lots of launches, lots of action, no doubt, on the track from Friday.
Well, actually from Thursday, with the all the support categories are on the track, the V8 supercars and Formula Ford and the Lamborghinis, 22 Lamborghinis coming in from overseas, all those kind of things, the Nations Cup as well this year. So that gets underway on Thursday. Formula One action obviously on Friday, but also this year the speed comparison between the Formula One car, Larry Perkins' V8 supercar, and a road car, a BMW, to be driven by Alan Moffat. And Alan Moffat will get well over a minute start around the Albert Park track on the a minute start on the Formula One car, and Larry Perkins will be somewhere between Alan Moffat and the Formula One car. And if the calculations are right, the three cars should come to the finish line pretty much together.
Mm. Yes, well, as you say, it's a jam-packed, really a week that we're going to be seeing from now through till the chequered flag falls next Sunday. And, of course, it's amazing, isn't it? You know, we looked at the start of the season last year, and already here we are again, ready to kick off the 2001 Formula 1 season in Melbourne in what I'm sure is probably going to be a great event once again.
Yes, and it perhaps can't come soon enough for people who love Formula 1. It's well, it has come around very quickly. It's way back in October last year since there was last a Formula 1 race, so I think people get pretty hungry for it at the start of the season, and you know, the great thing is that the eyes of the world are on Melbourne and Australia for the start of the season, and it generates so much coverage overseas for both Melbourne and Australia, and you see those pictures throughout the years throughout the year in magazines and books and whatnot, and I'm sure television coverage showing what a terrific place it is to have a race.
Mm. Well, Geoffrey Harris from the Australian Grand Prix Corporation, thanks very much for joining us today on Inside Motorsport.
Thanks very much.
Inside Motorsport will return after these messages.
Buying a home? Get an Aussie Legal Information Kit. Got yourself a traffic offence? Get an Aussie Legal Information Kit. It's not legal advice, it's good legal information. And it's written in everyday language by experienced lawyers to help everyday Australians understand just about any legal issue. Aussie Legal is Australia's up-to-date online information and law firm referral service. Aussie Legal's information kits cover over 100 areas of the law and could possibly save you from unnecessary legal action and costly mistakes. From small legal questions to big legal issues, your first step is an Aussie Legal Information Kit. Quick, easy and affordable legal information for everyday Australians for only $49.95 plus postage and handling, complete with a free internet download of any other Aussie Legal Info Kit.
Here's how to order. Call this number now, 1-800-00-1194. Write the number down, 1-800-00-1194. Call now, 1-800-00-1194.
Sponsors of Triple S.
The Churchill Trust is now calling for Australians from all walks of life to apply for the 2002 Churchill Fellowships. You could be going overseas in 2002 for about 4 to 10 weeks on a Churchill Fellowship that would cover fares, a living allowance and fees. No special qualifications are needed as merit of the project and the benefit to Australia are significant factors. Look up the Churchill Trust on www.churchilltrust.org.au or call the Trust on 1800 777 231. Applications closed 28th of February 2001.
Inside Motorsport, from the racetrack to your radio.
The news this week is that things have gone all pear-shaped for the American Le Mans race down in Adelaide. And joining us now is our Adelaide correspondent, David Langfield. Dave, obviously some goings-on down there in the state parliament, which have seen the cancellation of what looked to be potentially a very great race for Adelaide.
Well, as we said a couple of weeks ago, it was a great event for Adelaide, and suddenly at 10 past 2 our time here on Friday afternoon, I got a phone call from one of my officials, mates, to say that the state government had knocked it on the head. And from all accounts, the main players involved found out probably about half an hour before we did. And the story that we've had was that panels was apparently not told until the last minute. Dean Rainsford, the guy in charge of Panels Motorsport Australia here in Adelaide, was on a holiday, was contacted by his own staff saying what's going on, and they found out because the media rang them for comment. Glenn Cooper, the boss of Cooper's Brewery here, which had signed a rather large sponsorship deal to sponsor race for 3 years, story goes that he was found out at the luncheon where the Premier, Mr. Olsen, announced it to the rest of the people, and he was sort of left with his jaw on the table.
Yeah, it's not the very best way to sort of make announcements about the decision of what potentially was going to be quite a major motorsport undertaking for Adelaide over the next few years.
Oh, look, had huge potential, as we're all saying. You know, who's the feeling here was for a long time, oh, you know, we lost the Grand Prix, but you know, we'll pick ourselves up and get on with something else. And it was a case of now, hey, we didn't need that back anymore. As I said to you, you know, a month or so ago, everyone here is saying, well, we found a replacement on an international level for that. Obviously, the Clipsville 500 has been a huge success, and everyone loves that. And this was only building on and enhancing what we already had. So, everyone was fine with it. All sorts of stories. We really haven't got the full story coming out yet, and who knows whether we actually will ever have it. They've cited several reasons, one being, obviously, budget. We've had a huge dispute with the Nurses Federation here, and no one wishes to pin the blame on them, and even the Nurses Federation, one of the representatives, is feeling that they're getting sort of scapegoated for this, in that they are looking for something like, I think, 200 extra nurses here, all of them working double shifts and what have you, according to their claims, and a pay dispute being going on for weeks and weeks with threats of strike action. And at the last minute here, they're saying, well, the choice was, the government's saying, well, the choice was, a race which is costing everyone money, or I'll put some nurses on. And, in fairness, that's certainly a valid way to spend money. But the nurses, I think they're feeling like they're being a bit used as well in this. And really speaking, I personally feel there's more to it than what we're being told, because it was just so sudden. And negotiations, I mean, you've got the Tourism Minister, Joan Hall, I think she wanted it to continue and was saying so. And you've got a situation where one part of the party doesn't want to sort of seem to have the same story as the next.
Mm. And of course, then you've got the state opposition down there leaping in and saying, well, what's going on?
Well, they really just, as usual, I mean, they're a bit of, we've seen a fair bit of a bunch of pot stirrers at the best of times, but, that's their job, to try and, score points off the party that's in power and try and take votes away from them in the next election, and so be it, that's their job to do so. But I don't think they've really taken a stance at this stage. I mean, they don't want to appear to be getting offside by people saying, hey, we don't need nurses, because yes, we do. But by the same token, it was a great tourism thing. New Year's Eve, of course, not everyone was going to be there for various reasons. Obviously they're at their own parties and stuff, so it's not really fair to gauge it on the attendances for that. Television, obviously, it wasn't televised here live because of, no television sponsor is going to pay money to have their advertising on during a New Year's Eve celebration when everyone else is off, having a drink somewhere and their TV program's not going to be watched. So, again, it's so hard to judge it. You can't, if they were looking at canning it for the sake of attendances, which attendances were very good, or lack of television, people watching it, well, then they really should have waited for another couple of years to have a look at it.
Mm. Of course, those of us who believe in conspiracy theories could believe that due to the clash of dates that was planned between the Adelaide Le Mans race this year and another series which is having their final race in Melbourne, that some pressure could have been put on the state government saying, well, look, you've got a ready good player going here.
Yeah, which we could well take away from you, because we've established another street race somewhere else, and it's not hard to probably knock up another one if we had to. I sort of was expecting this call all weekend from you. Well, I don't think that there would have been a real need anyway, because that particular track would have its own officials anyway. South Australia's got a well-established base of officials. We've had so for a long time. Half of our guys are going over now to help them run the Melbourne event that's on next weekend. I really don't think that we had to draw on too many of them. Okay, I think we had something like about 700 or 800 officials there, but see, I tell you what, I had no one from that particular state that came on my team, and I had, I think, an international as well as three interstaters. I think one from Canberra, one from Perth, and I think another one from New South Wales. Well, I don't think we had anyone from Victoria, so I really don't think that was an issue. I think that, like you say, the conspiracy theory thing leaks right, that somebody might have just pulled a few strings to make it happen.
Mm. Well, obviously, a big disappointment for the fans of sports car racing over in Adelaide.
Huge disappointment.
Mm. Well, Dave, thanks for joining us this week on Inside Motorsport. We know that we'll be chatting you in the following weeks as we lead up to the other event that occurs in a few months' time.
Oh, certainly looking forward to that, and we'll certainly look at some preview situation for that as developments take place there.
Dave Langfield joining us on Inside Motorsport. And of course, I have heard some other stuff which I can't broadcast yet, but stay tuned, because Don Panos could be making some major purchases which could see some very interesting outcomes, and some very interesting speculation going on at the moment about the future of a number of American racing series. But one American racing series that has been rocked to its core all this week is NASCAR, and Peter Norton put together this tribute to the Intimidator.
You got him, Mikey. You got him, man. You got him. Get him in the three car, Dan. Oh, big trouble. Still wrecked behind him. Get him back. Come on. To the plow. Come on, Mikey. You got it, man. You got it. You got it. You got it. You got it. Mikey! Yes! All right! Michael Walcott wins. How about Dale? Is he okay? Schrader has climbed out of his car. He and Earnhardt crashed together. Olivia turns 3 and 4. While rescue workers attend to Dale Earnhardt, who is still in his car, his driver is in our Coca-Cola victory lane.
Can I say one more thing? It hasn't sunk in yet. I know I would have never won without Dale Jr., so he has to get half the credit. And I know I never would have won without the belief in Dale Jr. and Dale Sr. had for me, and Napa, and all the people on my team. I owe it all, or most of it, to Dale Jr. He helped me a lot. And his daddy, too. I saw him back there fighting them off.
I don't really know. I'm not a doctor. I mean, I got the heck out of the way as soon as they got there. I'm fine. Just thinking about Dale and them guys.
He had what I feel were life-ending type injuries at the time of impact, and really nothing could be done for him. He never showed any signs of life, and subsequently was pronounced dead.
After the accident in turn 4 at the end of the Daytona 500, we've lost Dale Earnhardt. NASCAR has lost its greatest driver ever.
It's hard to comprehend the statistic sheets for Dale Earnhardt. They're now permanent, but it's real easy to understand that Dale Earnhardt will be a part of this sport for many generations to come.
In Victory Lane, I just couldn't wait. I won the race, and I was telling everybody about it, and I just couldn't wait till I got that big grab on the neck and a big hug. I just knew any minute Dale was going to run in Victory Lane and say, "That's what I'm talking about right there." But that wasn't to be. Instead of patting me on the back and having a party with me, he's up there hanging out with my dad. The checkered flag was getting ready to wave. It was 3 or 4 cars in a tight pack, and they got together. I want to ask that everyone keep Sterling Marlin in your prayers. Sterling didn't do anything wrong. Sterling was simply racing. And when the checkered's waving, nobody's going to let off. But it's the last lap. It's racing. I don't think that race looks like, that wreck looked like to me, a result of anything other than just guys wanting to get to the checkered. And I believe that in my heart. And I hope that people will remember Sterling during this time too, because, you know, they made contact. There's no denying that. But I did not see that being anyone's fault. Just hard racing on the last lap.
A Darren Hart family, sisters, uncles, cousins, we're all deeply saddened by the loss. And I appreciate everybody's thoughts and prayers, and we'll get through this. And I'm sure he'd want us to keep going, so that's what we're going to do. Hey, there's not a cloud in sight. It's as blue as your blue goodbye. And I thought that it would break the day you went away. Everybody deals with this in their own way, and we appreciate everybody's support. I mean, it really, really means a lot. It makes a big difference when you see the reaction from hundreds and hundreds of people like we have already, and you know, we appreciate everybody's support, and it's a tough time.
It was blue as your goodbye, and I thought that it would rain on a day like today. Hey, there's not a cloud in sight. It's as blue as your blue goodbye, and I thought that it would rain the day you went away.
Inside Motorsport will return after these messages.
Well, that was a brilliant run by first, second and third place getters, but the best form we've seen here today has been from ACTAB, who now are paying more for place bets than ever before. Remember, ACTAB place bets now pay you more. Sponsors of Triple S.
The 27th Olympiad were the best games ever. This amazing event may be over, but the memories will remain with us throughout our lives with the Olympic highlights. Sydney 2000. This official video record captures the magic moment that epitomized the spirit of the Olympics. Share the elation of winning gold, relive the disappointment and heartbreak that goes with not achieving your dream, and enjoy the exhilaration that unified Australia in this collector's edition special release video. The Olympic highlights Sydney 2000, a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to own a piece of our history. And it's yours for just $44.95 delivered to your door, or in three easy interest-free payments of $15 each. Olympic highlights Sydney 2000. To order, call National Direct now on 1-800-246-868. Write the number down, 1-800-246-868. Call now, 1-800-246-868.
Sponsors of Triple S.
Let's shake our hips with Wag the Dog. Turn your head and groove along. Shake your hands and move your knees. We're dancing with Wag the Dog.
Buy a guide dog puppy keyring and help a puppy become a guide dog. These are great.
Groovy. I love them.
Like Wag the Dog. We're dancing with Wag the Dog.
Be like the Wiggles and help a puppy become a guide dog. A guide dog puppy keyring at Woolworths supermarkets now, just $2.50.
Inside Motorsport, from the racetrack to your radio.
One man that we welcome to Inside Motorsport for the first time is the voice of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Radio Network, Mike King. And Mike, it is a pleasure to have you join us here on Inside Motorsport.
Greg, great to be with you. I only wish I could be there with you in person.
From a road racing nation to a speedway-dominated nation, of course, it has been a very tragic week for you all.
Yes, it has, Greg. You know, the passing of Dale Earnhardt obviously has been the major story in this country for the last week. But you know, just like I do, in working with these racers and covering, you know, motorsport, it seems to be a eye on the future. There seems to be very little looking backwards in motorsports, and NASCAR has moved on. I mean, quite literally, NASCAR has moved forward and said Dale Earnhardt would want us to do that, and that's what we're going to do. And of course, they raced the weekend following his death at Rockingham, and they will continue to race. And it's, you know, I have been a part, unfortunately, of a couple of situations where I've lost drivers that I call friends of mine. Scott Brayton at the Speedway just a few years ago is a good example. But the bottom line is, for racers and for race teams, the best therapy is to get back to the racetrack, realizing that this is always going to be an incredibly dangerous sport, but it's what they have chosen as their, I guess, lot in life, and that's what racers do. They take the chance, and they have to figure themselves invincible, because if they don't, what's the sense of getting in the race car? But I think slowly but surely the NASCAR community and racing in general here in the United States will heal, and before long, Dale Earnhardt, while he'll always be remembered, I think he'll be remembered more for his greatness in the car as opposed to the tragedy at Daytona.
One of the major battles that started in motorsport was, of course, the IRL kart split. where Tony George decided to set up a series of oval track races for open wheel cars. That developed into the IRL, which now has got a huge following right around the world.
Well, I don't think, Craig, that we could be any happier with the momentum that the series has seen going into the 2001 season. We open March the 18th with the Copper World Indy 200 at Phoenix International Raceway. It will be a 200-lap, 200-mile event. And going into that event, of course, as you well know, Roger Penske will have his drivers, Gilles Deferrin and Helio Castroneves there. And I think the fact that Roger Penske has opted to be a part of that event says something to the rest of the open wheel racing community. We, of course, at the Radio Network, are going to continue to focus on our drivers, the drivers that will compete for the Indy Racing Northern Light Series Championship, the drivers that will run for the Northern Light Cup. But there is no denying the fact that Penske's involvement and seeing Penske come back to not just this event, the opening event at Phoenix, but the Indianapolis 500 says something about his respect now for the way the series is being run. A lot of that has to do with our Vice President of Race Operations, Brian Barnhart, who has done just a fabulous job making this a professional series. And in 5 years, I believe this series has become truly a premier series in terms of open-wheel, oval-track racing. And I think our product last year proved out the formula works and works really well. So I'm really excited, as are, I think, all of the teams that are getting set for Phoenix.
The battle between IRL, Mike, has always been an interesting one and has been drawn in fairly obvious lines. Speedway competitors love it. Road racing people just want to race at Indy once a year.
And, you know, it's happened, certainly to a great degree. Now, by no means are all the drivers that participate on a regular basis in the Indy Racing Northern Light Series and in the Indy Racing League or at the Indianapolis 500, by no means are they all from a grassroots racing background that started on dirt. But certainly more drivers now than you ever saw 10, 12, 15, 20 years ago are there and getting that opportunity. A driver like Billy Boat, for example, who owns the USAC record for consecutive wins in a midget car. A guy, for example, like, you take a look at a guy like Sam Hornish Jr., who grew up racing go-karts and quarter midgets and slowly advanced through the formula ranks in the United States and did a good job in the Formula Atlantic Series. A girl like Sarah Fisher, who at 20 years old has already had experience in karts, in quarter midgets, in USAC and Neymar's midgets, and in wing sprint cars on dirt. It is that sort of driver now that is getting a look where, you know, 10 years ago, Craig, as you well know, it just didn't happen. You had to be a specialist, and generally the specialist that they were looking for, and I talk of kart drivers, the specialist that they were looking for was a street or road course series specialist because the bulk of their races were moving in that direction. Now, the focus in this series shifts to the people that have grown up racing on ovals, and that is now why I think you're seeing such good racing. Buddy Lazier is a great example. Buddy just did a fabulous job last year. We saw Eddie Cheever's true colors last year. We saw great racing from Scott Goodyear, from Scott Sharp, from Mark Dismore, right on down through the ranks. You know, Greg Ray had a miserable year in 2000. But he still showed that he can go out there and run with the best of them. We have some outstanding oval racers. Now, what they would do on a street or road course, I have no idea, but we're not concerned with that. All we're concerned with is what these guys can do when they crank it up and go out there and race 200-plus miles an hour on an oval track.
Mm. You look at that period through the late 70s and 80s and then into the 90s where there was just a career path cut off for the people who would normally be the great sons of the Speedway. You talk about your sleepy trips. It was a very few drivers, probably Vogler and Sam Fox, were the only two that could break it through and not have what we call here in Australia is the Brazilian money that stops talent getting through to the top levels.
Well, and you look at Vogler, you know, you look at Rich Vogler and Stan Fox, and even though they were able to break through, Craig, they were never able to break through in a big way. They were able to get the one-off deal, you know, for the 500 and able to gather enough sponsorship and able to gain enough support with a particular team. For example, Stan Fox was always affiliated with Himmelgarn Racing. With Rich Vogler, I think it was Jonathan Bird who was always his primary supporter there at the Speedway. But Rich Vogler was certainly a driver, as was Stan Fox. These were two drivers that deserved to be running full-time in the what was then the kart series, without a doubt, but they were never going to get an opportunity. And, you know, I think that defines the principal difference in philosophy between the Indy Racing League and kart, is where you look is in terms of your talent pool. And certainly now, the short track driver that cut his teeth on a dirt track, regardless of where it is, be it Australia or Indiana, if that driver can prove himself capable of handling a car under those conditions, he might get a look. You know, look at Tony Stewart. Tony Stewart is a classic example. Had it not been for the Indy Racing League, where would Tony Stewart be right now? Tony got his first look from John Menard because a guy named John Barnes believed in him. And Tony immediately disproved the theory that a driver who drives a front-engine, dirt-type, sprint, midget, silver crown car, whatever it might be, open-wheel-type car, cannot adapt to a rear-engine, pavement, race car, Indy car. And Tony dispelled that myth, boom, as quick as you can snap your fingers, and then suddenly the floodgates began to open. And now there are so many drivers out there that want a shot, it's going to be interesting to see how team owners selectively make that next young driver their pick. Casey Mears comes into the series this year. And Casey, who of course is the nephew of Rick Mears, he might well be an immediate impact. He's only 23 years old from Bakersfield, California. But Casey Mears proved it in one kart event last year, the only one he ran there at Fontana. He wound up with a fourth place finish in his debut. And yet he realistically did not have a decent offer of any sort from an established car team. And here Rick Mears, his uncle, who was an advisor to Roger Penske, Roger Penske didn't have an opening, and Rick advised him, hey, it's time to make the move to the Indy Racing League. That's where you need to go. So I think that says something about the series, and certainly, yeah, I hope so, because to have Rick Mears' endorsement, to me personally, is a big, big deal.
Al Unser Jr., a two-time Indianapolis 500 winner. He won last year at Las Vegas, and this year, Budweiser on board.
Yeah, that's right. As a matter of fact, Budweiser will be on board for both Little Al and for Casey, who will be his teammate at Gallus Racing. That, Craig, will be a three-car team this year. Didier André, the Frenchman, who, if I'm not mistaken, he was either second or third in Indy Lights in the championship points last year, will be the third member of that team. But, yeah, Budweiser will be a part of the sponsorship package for both Casey and Little Al. And I had an opportunity to spend a few minutes with Al at Phoenix at the Open Test a few weeks ago. And Al has come back ready for the season in great shape, getting that first year in the Indy Racing League under his belt. He says he feels very, very comfortable, and he believes that he's going to win the championship. I mean, he'll tell you that straight out, that he thinks that his car is going to be the car to beat this year. I think, though, Buddy Lazier might have something to say about that.
And you mentioned the young driver, Sarah Fisher, who cut her teeth in the midgets and sprints.
You know, I think in a lot of ways, I think Derek Walker maybe protected her just a bit. Derek really was thinking, I'm going to use this first year with Sarah to bring her along, to teach her some of the tactics of Indy racing and get her used to this. And then as we got towards the end of the season, we saw him allow her to do a little bit more racing. And I think this year she's going to come into the league with a big sponsorship package from Procter & Gamble. And I think you're going to see Sarah Fisher run more towards the front and at the front this year, as opposed to last year when she was really trying to deal with the learning curve a little bit more.
Mike, the IRL cars have had a number of changes over the years in the engines, starting with the turbochargers, but now they have got the carburetors back on them. And this year, there's been a couple of other changes to those Infinities and Oldsmobile engines.
Well, when the league went back to a V8 engine, it was based on, a production design, both by Infiniti, which is Nissan, and the Aurora, the Oldsmobile by Aurora, which is General Motors. They have shifted a bit away from the production design. It remains a V8 engine. We have reduced the displacement from 4 liters to 3.5 liters. That happened last season. And now this season, everyone will be running the 180-degree crankshaft, the flat crank, Last year you had the option to run either the 180 degree flat crank or the 90 degree crank. And that 90 degree crank, as you know, Craig, you know, produces almost a stock car type sound in these cars. The 180 degree crank gives the car a bit more of a whine, but it's still that, not that turbocharged whine that a lot of people are used to hearing when you talk about Indy cars. But in terms of horsepower, we're still, you know, right at 700 horsepower, and I think, the engine builders have done a great job. There is rumor that we will have one, perhaps two new engine builders, coming to the Indy Racing League next year, so that would bring us to four manufacturers. And right now, the Infiniti 35A, which is the newest design of that Infiniti Indy V8, is being touted as the one to be on the lookout for this year. Eddie Cheever has high hopes for that, and he really believes that the Infiniti will be the engine to beat.
The Indy Racing Radio Network, which you, of course, are the anchor of, that radio network is available to us here in Australia if we want to hear the races live.
That's exactly right, and you know we are a worldwide network. Of course, in addition to broadcasting the events that are contained inside the series, the Indy Racing League, the Indy Racing Northern Lights Series, we also originate the broadcast for the NASCAR Winston Cup Series Brickyard 400 that's run at the Speedway, as well as the U.S. Grand Prix Formula One event that's run at the Speedway. But you're right, Craig. You know you can hear us. We're on two different short wave bands. We're on the World Harvest LeSay Broadcasting Network worldwide. We're also on the internet. So yes, you can hear us. I'm not sure if we have affiliates proper in either Sydney or Melbourne, but you can dial up the broadcast on the internet and hear every Indy Racing League event. If you have internet access, you've got access to us.
Well, it's going to be a very exciting season, Mike King. It's a pleasure to catch up with you this week and look forward to hearing from you throughout the series of IRL races. And, of course, Inside Motorsport is going to catch up with all the IRL action right throughout the season.
Well, Craig, you know, I look forward to talking to you throughout the season. I've got to ask, are you going to make the trip back over for the U.S. Grand Prix?
We might not make it this year. Where our plans at this stage are 2002 Daytona 500 and get a whole bunch of dirt track racing and speed weeks down there in Florida.
Okay, well, we look forward to seeing you, and when you're back, make sure you stop by the broadcast booth, and would love to get your Australian perspective on the air during one of our broadcasts.
And now it's our very great pleasure to be joined by Formula One test driver for the Benetton team, Mark Webber, and here he is chats with Craig Revell.
And Mark, welcome back to Australia, and more importantly, welcome home.
Yeah, hi. It's good to be here. Nice and sunburned very, very quickly from the European winter, so it's always nice to get a bit of sun on the skin, so it's good to be back.
The testing so far, how have you enjoyed the new role at Benetton?
I've enjoyed it a lot. I haven't done as much as I would have liked to have done, but there's always time for that later on in the season. I'm starting pretty much when I get straight back from Melbourne, so the work will be coming in there. But as far as the enjoyment side of it, it's gone very well. I've had a lot of time with the team and working with the boys down the factory and working on certain things down there, and also replaced Jensen the week before last at Estoril to do a day and a half down there, and did a bit of testing before Christmas. So yeah, it's going along very, very nicely. The team is absolutely brilliant. We're getting on fantastic. The relationship is buzzing along great, actually.
You also have got the Formula 3000 ride in place. How have you found working with the Supernova organisation?
Again, just fantastic. They've got a lot of experience when it comes to Formula 3000. I've done the Imola test, which was 2 weeks ago, and I just drove the car again just before I left at Snedderdam, which was just the exclusive test which Supernova did. And I must say, I'm getting used to the car again, because it seemed quite a while from Spa race last year where I drove the 3000, and I've done a reasonable amount of Formula One running since then, so to get used to the car with three pedals again and not two pedals and the clutch on the floor and things like that, it took a while actually at Imola to just I could smoke around half a second off no problems, but to get that last bit, which is always the hard bit, when it wasn't coming that easy to me, was a bit frustrating, but now getting into 3000 again and getting the feel for it and working with the engineers, with what Mark Webber likes in the car, and it's just, they're a great bunch of guys, it's really good.
How much of a different attitude is taken towards you this year, now that you have got a Formula One testing contract in place? Do people look at Mark Webber a little bit differently, particularly sponsorship-wise?
Well, in terms of the industry over there, I think I have made a step up working with Benetton and being the reserve driver for them. Obviously, holding a super license now and certain things like that. You know, it's a bit of a reward to me that Benetton have taken those steps to have me that involved with their team. So that's great. In terms of sponsorship. I'll say it again, I've said it before and I'll say it again, it's very, very difficult out of Australia. I've had awesome support from Yellow Pages, unbelievable, very, very good, and obviously Fosters and the Qantases and the likes of that, it's been fantastic, but there's no corporation out here really that can make a huge difference to what we're trying to do, so it's best to just keep our head down and not get frustrated by the fact that there's five new guys on the Formula One grid this year which are taking money that we can't even believe, we couldn't even think of trying to get out of our country. So it's got to come, the opportunity will hopefully come past my nose sometime shortly, and I've just got to keep doing my best.
When Paul did purchase Minardi, was there ever any talk that he might do a Jenson Button and perhaps borrow you back to be the driver over there?
It never come to me that there was any borrowing going on, but they might have done, the hierarchy might have done a bit of that, but at the end of the day, they've got to come back to me as well and say what, in a way, what I would like to do. And for sure, they're quite powerful and they can have quite a bit of say in it, but I'm very excited with what I've got with Renault and Supernova this year. I think it's not going to be an easy year, although I'd love to be in Formula One, but there is certain limits on what level you want to try and go in at, and it would be a very hard season, I think, to be driving for Minardi in your first year.
Mm. How much has Renault already started to move into both Supernova and to Benetton?
Renault is moving into Benetton very, very heavily. There's quite a few French people in the factory already, on all sides, you know, with not so much development, but all, you know, the press and marketing, so the whole company there is a lot of French people moving in, so that's exciting. Supernova is still very, very very English. David Sears is at the helm, and we will run the Renault livery this year, and it's the Benetton Junior team, so that's about as far as it goes in terms of Supernova and Renault.
Mm. And now, how much longer do you get to spend at home before your duties as an ambassador for the Formula One Grand Prix do take over?
Tuesday I'll be down there. I've got to start work on Tuesday afternoon, and I always enjoy the week down there. It's great to have the Australian the Australian Grand Prix, to have the people from Europe come out and enjoy our event, because it's one of the best, if not the best event on the calendar. So it would be nice in some ways. You know, we're very fortunate that we've got the first race of the season with all the new liveries and the driver changes and all that fun, and the expectations and the tyre war, and there's loads of new things going on this year, which is great. But always the last race of the year, I think, you know, proves to be potentially more exciting for championships, and also the cars are a lot more reliable, so you have a few more people finishing races. So Melbourne this year, I think there's going to be quite a lot of retirements during the event.
Mm. And of course you'd be hoping that you might be able to pick up another piece of silverware at the Motorsport Awards on Wednesday night.
Yeah, I'm going to the awards night. Always a fantastic evening, catch up with a lot of people that but obviously in the domestic scene here that I don't see during the season, so it's always a good night, and it's one of the best nights of the week, actually, so I'm looking forward to that.
All right. Well, Mark, it's a pleasure to catch up with you again. Have a safe stay in the country, and, of course, a safe trip home to England.
thanks very much, and hello to everyone in the Canberra and Queanbeyan region, and fingers crossed, we'll just keep pushing on. Thanks a lot.
Mark Webber joining us on the line, Inside Motorsport, where we are about to wrap it up, but Peter, you were at Wakefield Park today and enjoyed a lot of great racing.
Yes, it was quite a fantastic day there at Wakefield Park. As usual, it's a very good family-oriented track, excellent value for money in the entry fees, great viewing, all of that type of thing. And really the surprise story coming out of it all is the new star of the V8 Light series, and that's Leanne Ferrier.
And that is Light.
Yes, she's a humble little girl, quite shy in some respects. And, yeah, it's the girl next door image, and I think that's going to work very well in terms of their marketing. It's she's not trying to be a sex symbol or anything like that. She's getting on and racing. And I must stress that she's not just the token female racer in there. Particularly in the second race, she had a whole lot of pressure from about three or four different cars on her tail, and she held them off for nearly 10 laps in fine style. And then she pulled away from them and executed a fine pass to get up in the second. She's not there because she's a female. She's not there because of people she knows. She's there because of merit in her own driving. So she's one to watch in the future.
Now, of course, this is motorsport capital and, of course, rally capital of Australia. And one rally story that crosses over here was very interesting early in the morning.
Yes, that's right. Rod Salmon, who was a big rally fan a few years back, poured quite a lot of money into his own career. He also supported Michael Guest for a while, helping to raise his profile. And I think he's take some credit in Michael getting across to Europe as part of the World Rally Championship. Yeah, Rod Salmon, he had an accident in rallying a few years back, and he's gotten back into motorsport in terms of circuit racing. And he qualified okay on Saturday in a very nice piece of machinery, Ford Falcon, which is in part put together by the Brad Jones Racing from Albury. We arrived there this morning and they're putting this car back on the truck. Have a look around. No, there's no damage or anything to it. Apparently some sort of commercial disagreement, we suspect. And Brad Jones said, well, that's it for the weekend. We're taking it home. So that's an interesting one. We'll have to watch that with interest to see if Rod Salmon can piece that deal back together and get it back on the track for Oran Park in a few weeks.
And I know one thing that has captivated us here at Inside Motorsport all week, other than the Avesco accreditation saga, which has been going on behind the scenes, is Dale Earnhardt's death. And, of course, it has been very interesting to see even the differences in Canberra and Sydney on the way they've reported this story, and then, of course, even to see what happened in Auto Action this week.
Yeah, if I was writing a NASCAR yearbook for 2001, I would be quite busy now writing 60-70% of this year's book. This is the story of the millennium, particularly. Yeah, so far of the millennium, this is it. He's the biggest name in NASCAR. He's one of the biggest names in sport in the US, and therefore, because of numbers, you know, the world. And as you said, it's interesting, the different coverage. On Monday, it got quite good coverage in the electronic media, TV and radio. Some of the reports were a little bit wrong, but the main points, unfortunately, were true. Then in the print media, some papers giving it a tiny little box, you know, just a couple of words.
Which is understandable, considering our position in the world.
Yes. Yeah, I understand that he's not a household name here. And, you know, the delay in terms of the print media being Tuesday for what appeared to be a Sunday event, because of the time zone differences, it was really a Monday morning event, missing the deadlines for the papers by many, many hours. I guess what disappoints me in the coverage of it is specialist motorsport, particularly ones who pretend to be general motorsport, not just aligned with one particular series, and they give it less than 10% of their cover. That's clearly the biggest story of the year in terms of impact on the sport, and they give it a rather lousy coverage. The rest of their cover goes to midfielders in a particular series that just disappointing. Don't these people realise there's more to motorsport than this?
It was an interesting development right throughout the week. In fact, the New York Times and the New York Post both had Dale Earnhardt on their covers Tuesday morning to give other people an idea. I saw some reports that 300 out of, I think there's 380 countries in the world, did
cover the story of Dale Earnhardt's death in some form or another. And that in itself is an amazing number. Perhaps television being a hoard of pictures, it was that Fox had the pictures.
Yep. In the US last year, there was a survey of name recognition. They do it all the time to value sponsorships and endorsements. And, of course, Michael Jordan's and Tiger Woods are always right up there with in the high 90s of recognition. Dale Earnhardt was there at 90%. So that means that 270 million Americans know his name and what he did. And that's just awesome penetration for any brand name. And then you extract that out to...
And 114 million hated him.
Well, love him or hate him, you had to respect him. He was a true competitor. And the Daytona 500, if you ignore the last half a lap, that was one of his best drives ever. He was very much a competitor in that race. And he set up the win for his team cars. He held off a field of 10 or so cars banging on his rear bumper. And unfortunately, that's how it ended. And throughout the race, he was very aggressive in a form of racing that he doesn't really like, and that was the restrictor plate racing. He has hated it for years. He always thought it was dangerous, but he was the best one out there at it.
We, of course, heard about the death threats that have gone out to Sterling Marlin, and you could be sure that if the shoe was on the other foot and they were in opposite cars, that would have been the end result of that whole altercation. Marlin would not have backed off, Earnhardt would not have backed off, and one person would not have finished that race. Not necessarily been killed, but just wouldn't. Not all the cars were getting through turn four. That was a fait accompli. What has amazed me is the stories that, one, the death threats on Marlin. Probably not surprising because Earnhardt had passionate fans. But number two was the trip from Daytona back to Charlotte was like a funeral parade. No one was prepared to pass the number three tractor trailer on its way back to Concord, North Carolina.
Yeah, it has such a penetration, NASCAR in the US, and in particular the South. It's nearly up there with religion, really. I won't make the Beatles faux pas and say that it's bigger than religion. They've got John Lennon in all sorts of strife, but it's right up there. These people wear their colours and their heart on their sleeve for whatever team that they cheer for, and I've never been a particular Dale Earnhardt fan because he drove the wrong form of car, but you always knew when Dale Earnhardt won that he won in a pretty competitive race. You were beaten by one of the best. So yeah, it's a lot of respect out there for him, no matter what team you cheer for.
I know I am lucky now to have seen his last Super Speedway victory at Talladega. He was last with, I think, 10 laps to go. He was 17th with 5 laps to go, and he won the restrictor plate new aero package race. And in victory lane, he pulled up onto the car, the winner of $1 million through the Winston No Bull promotion. And there Dale Earnhardt was standing with his arm in the air, holding aloft this new millionaire's arm in the air that he had won through that cigarette company's promotion of the race. And that probably is a great memory to personally carry of Dale Earnhardt.
Yeah, I think in recent years he has become, at least externally, a little bit more of the family man and a bit more friendly. The intimidator very much still applied on the track, and that was shown in the Daytona 500. He was very intimidating, giving another competitor the bird after a little bit of rubbing with a rookie. Very intimidating on the track. Always intimidating to the media. When I was at the Brickyard 400 a few years ago, trying to chase him for an interview, there was a pack of us, and he's very cagey. He was very swift through the pit area. No one could catch him on foot or on wheels. So, he's going to be sadly missed.
That's all we have time for this week on Inside Motorsport. Thanks for being with us, and we certainly look forward to what's coming up next weekend when we get into the first race of the Formula One season, the Australian Formula One Grand Prix.
Inside Motorsport is produced by Thunder Media in the studios of Triple S FM Canberra via Comrade Sat with the support of the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia.